Welcome into an interview edition of the Future Sox podcast. My name is Elijah Evans, and I am super excited today to be joined by White Sox pitching coordinator Matt Zaleski. I'm really pumped to have Matt on and just talk a little bit about the overall pitching within the White Sox organization as we kind of kick off the full offseason here with the World Series wrapping up this week. We're really getting geared up for 2026. It's time to start kind of considering all the possibilities, looking back at some of the development from 25, and really just getting excited about the future right now, because I think a lot of people, including staff that we've talked to, are really excited about the steps moving forward from the organization. So thanks for joining, Matt. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Elijah.
Yeah, we appreciate you taking the time, man. So before we kind of get into the nitty gritty of all the pitching stuff and just pick your brain, because obviously you're around every pitcher in the organization from top down within the White Sox org, what was your overall impression of the 2025 season in Chicago? Obviously, you know, coming off of a tough year, but I think there was a lot of reason to be excited about the growth we saw in 2025.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of happy stories. Like to pick up Shane Smith on the Rule 5 and then make the All-Star team. You know, Grant Taylor making his debut. There's just a lot of good things coming and going on at top to bottom.
Yeah, I think that everybody kind of felt the same way in terms of the people that watch this team every day, like myself and others for sure. In terms of pitching side of things specifically, I was going to mention Shane Smith off the bat there. What is it about Shane Smith that you think, you know, made him such a clear target? Because everything we heard, like when he went first in the Rule 5, like the White Sox had no hesitation. It sounded like this was the guy they were picking. It was Shane, like he was the guy. What was it about him that made him so appealing and then led to him being, you know, the best starter on the roster this season?
He's got velo, right? That's number one for a starter. He can hold it for multiple innings, and he's got some deception. He hides the ball really well. There's a little interesting characteristics to his four-seam. And then changeup can get below zero, and he's got plenty of off-speed options. So just a lot of challenges for hitters he can present.
Yeah, 100%. It seems like he has just became even a more well-rounded pitcher as the season went on. Obviously, he had a little bit of a mid-season time where you could see he was slowing down a bit, but then even at the end of the season, he picked up and had some of his best starts of the year in September, which can be a really good indicator for some of these starters that you're able to, you know, late in the season still have some excellent starts where the stuff is as sharp as ever, right?
Absolutely. And I think he had a career high innings, made all the starts. It was just great.
Yeah, 100%. Other guys you mentioned, you know, at the big level, Mike Vassell is another one who was another, you know, Rule 5 guy that gets traded over. Mike Vassell, he kind of became this like fun Swiss Army reliever where he was throwing in every type of role. Like he wasn't necessarily in a particular bullpen role, and he made it work no matter where he was pitching. What did you see from Vassell this season that was encouraging, and kind of how do you see his outlook moving forward now too?
It's an interesting case because Did my headphones go dead? Oh no.
You're good. I was fixing mine. You're good.
It's an interesting case because like he does a lot, he can present a lot of different attributes, like stuff is nice, but it's kind of like he does things all over the place. It's hitters can't really lock in on one location. It's multiple different pitch shapes and just it. I don't want to call it a shotgun approach because there's a method to his madness, but like one time he'll throw a slider that backs up, then I'll throw it to its destination. Like there might be a method to his madness.
Yeah, no, it seems that way when you watch him pitch, and it seems like there's always, you know, some inconsistency there, but inconsistency in a good way. You look at some guys and even, you know, think about the World Series right now, you've got guys like, you know, Yamamoto, who's just always mixing and matching all over the zone. And yes, he has one insane pitch in that splitter, right? But the ability to just confuse you with the way he's working seems like something that Vassell played up in the bullpen, and in shorter spurts, he was able to even, you know, even further do that in those two inning spurts where he can just have you completely off balance the whole at bat with what he's able to throw.
Absolutely.
The other two guys I want to mention just on the big league staff in that bullpen, you mentioned Grant Taylor off the top there. What is it about Grant? So, you know, it was a very interesting conversation within the White Sox world and just, you know, in the baseball world in general to see him jump, you know, stop starting games, jump into the bullpen, and then immediately jump from Birmingham to Chicago, which we've seen a number of times with other pitchers. What is kind of in your brain and the White Sox kind of just the view of the organization, what was some of the thought process behind him just jumping into that relief role and getting into the bigs off the bat there?
I think part of it stemmed from like this isn't something that for the future. I still think Grant can be a starter in the future, but you know, with this first year, technically full season that he was healthy, we didn't want to push the too much of the innings limit. And the easiest way to have him contribute at the big league level was in a relief role. So we kind of just navigated that route and transition him from starter to bullpen in Birmingham and then got him up to the big leagues.
Yeah. Has there been conversations? I'm sure you've heard this many times, but has there been some conversations about what his future looks like? Cause I know, you know, some people think he could transition into a starter. Maybe it's now, maybe it's in 2 years from now. What is kind of the view of Grant kind of moving forward from here?
Yeah, I think right now you just take this year, see what he learned from it. I mean, you have two options. From my eyes, you have elite level closer stuff, which is always nice to have, and especially under a rookie contract, that's never bad to have. Or you could have a starter that can give you five innings. You know, Grant, he has produced some early contact, but, you know, his ability to get swing and miss, like, it's, you see it in the postseason, but it's generally not something that you see sustainable during the course of the year. It's those guys that go like five innings, and you know, I say that and then kind of take it back, because then you have Blake Snell who goes five innings every single start in the regular season and then just starts ripping off 7-8 innings in the postseason. So you never know.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing just about pitching in general. Before we get back into White Sox, I'm curious, just like, so you've got a guy, you have guys around the league right now where like the average starts are getting shorter and shorter, but your elite starters, when it comes down to it, and you want, the White Sox want to be competing in October, right? Everybody, that's the goal, right? Is to be at this point in October and competing in the biggest situations. Then you've got guys that are going, you know, that the top end guys are going 7-8 innings. What's your kind of stance on just generally the shift of what a starting pitcher's role is in Major League Baseball today?
So I think there's like two rooms of thought for that. The regular season, like if you know you have a team that's probably going to compete for the playoffs, like the Dodgers, and you're not going to fight tooth and nail to get in there, you can kind of do what they did and average 4 2/3 innings per start. But when you're a team like, and you're grinding through the division, your best attributes of your pitching staff are your starters, you are going to require more innings out of them. And if it comes to like winning a ball game and it's leaving your starter out there for 7 innings rather than 5, then that's probably the best route to go. So I think it all comes down to just who you have and what you trust in them.
Yeah, it seems very dependent on the people you got in place and how you go from there. And it's just a different game. It's always evolving. That's the cool thing about baseball, is it's always changing. There's always evolution to the way that the strategy behind baseball goes.
Indeed.
Yeah. The last guy I want to touch on the big league level, and then we'll get into some minor league guys, because obviously you work it throughout the development of the organization, throughout the whole organization, but we talk about a lot of these prospects and guys we're excited about. I want to touch on Jordan Leisure a little though quickly, because this is a guy whose octane stuff, just from a purely like, you know, velo breaking ball standpoint, like this is a guy who I thought, at least when he was coming up, you had a back end reliever, and it took some time. Last year was a bit of a struggle, some ups and downs for him. Even this season, the first half of 2025, there was definitely up and down. Had a really good second half, really started to show that he can be a leverage arm in the long term out of the bullpen. What did you see the shift from Leisure here from this season as he grew?
Him and Ethan actually, and Weiser, did some nice things in getting him deeper into his back leg, and which allowed him to get his arm on time better. And when that happened, he, you know, still held the same velo, approach angle stayed the same. He did end up getting a little bit better shape of a slider. Yeah. Which definitely helped, because it held velo and the shape helped. So like just having that second pitch for that elite fastball that he has allowed hitters to be a little more honest with him.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest things I noticed with the slider, is you see just in terms of just results too, like the slider was his best pitch by the numbers in terms of what people hit against him, rather than last season where it was one of the worst, I think, at least when you look at purely like run value production against it, like it went from being his worst offering to his better offering this season. And you just saw a more confident version of him, I think. You've got a guy who's got, you know, a whiff rate over 30%, striking out 30% of batters. He gets down the mound 7 feet of extension, right? is there, you know, what has been, so I know I talked to him in the spring and he's, I've known him since he was first came over to the org. And like, he was telling me like, oh, I'm still trying to figure out that third pitch, right? Like, what is that third thing going to be? Obviously the fastball and slider are great. What do you see as kind of that next evolution for him, whether it is the splitter or if it's a different type of thing to just find a third offering, even though he does have two great pitches, obviously.
Yeah. You know, this takes me back to 20, gosh, when he was in the fall league, I think that was 23 for us.
Yeah.
We tinkered around with a curveball and it's not like super powerful. It's in the 80, 81 range. But something to have decent contrast off of his fastball. Like I still kind of lean to that route, over the splitter. Like, to me, a splitter is another non-strike pitch for him. If he can just drop that curveball into lefties or righties early, it just allows the fastball to play up even better.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's going to be interesting to see what that looks like, obviously, because I know he's told me multiple times it is something he wants to be able to have a third pitch he trusts. But at the same time, you have two really good pitches that make his, you know, his stuff as good as it's been. It's been obviously the fastball slider, so you don't want to mess with that too much for the sake of integrating that third pitch, right?
No. You call that third pitch the run of the litter. You're not going to use it a whole lot. It's just something to help the family of pitches.
Yeah, something you have in the tank to keep people off balance. Talking a little bit about just the, you know, getting into pitch mix there, from an organizational standpoint, before we get into specific minor league guys, a lot of cutter usage and a lot of kind of generally just secondary fastball usage from the organization, I think, is something we've seen over the past couple of years in terms of an uptick in cutters, a little bit of a downtick in, you know, more traditional sliders, I think, in comparison to the way some other organizations are trending right now. Obviously, the line between the cutter and the gyro slider kind of somewhat blends at times these days. What are just some of the thoughts from your perspective on the organizational shift in terms of the pitch mix throughout the level?
Yeah, I mean, you have, like, it just comes to the whole arsenal standpoint. If you're a efficient four-seam guy with some hoppiness to it, you probably need a gyro, like, not necessarily in the zero vert, but like in the deep cutter gyro slider range of five vert, as your breaking ball options. And then if you are the east-west characteristics, you generally want a bridge pitch, because most of those guys have the sinker, the sweeper, and you have a little bit of a bridge pitch. And we all know fastballs are, like, realistically the easiest thing to hit, according to baseball. So, and there's far and far less being thrown. So giving more guys cutters just allows another avenue to stay off the barrel.
Yeah. Can you explain for people a little bit more about just that you mentioned east west there, right? So guys that move both obviously to the sides of the plate, what is that bridge? You know, what are the options there for a bridge for those types of pitchers?
The options, like, you, there's just weird cases you have. I mean, if we take Webb, for San Fran, he's got, like, his sinkers is farthest moving H break to his arm side, as he's got the sweeper moving left to his glove side. He does have, like, a little cutter, little four seam, but like his changeup is actually in a unique spot to where it's more closer to the zero line than a sinker. But it has massive depth to it. So it's like just finding a pitch that's in between your two main pitches to help navigate, like, platoon splits, really. Like, right-handed pitcher, right-handed hitter, you're going to go lean on your sinker sweeper. But, like, to face a lefty, lefties hit left on right, righty pitcher, left-handed hitter, you're going to lean a little bit more on trying to backdoor the sweeper, cutter up and in on the hands, and then hopefully have a changeup to keep them off balance.
Something to drop down. Yeah. And then you've got that opposite handed, right? You've seen, I think there's been a big push in baseball away from sweepers and even some breaking balls, sliders even, to the opposite hand, right? A righty on lefty, sweeper tends to be a pretty dangerous pitch often. So I think finding those other alternatives to go to the opposite side is probably an emphasis for a lot of young pitchers, especially early in their careers, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's more right-handed pitcher versus left-handed hitter than it is. Like, lefties just get away with so much more, which it's great. Lucky for them.
Yeah, and it's lucky that the White Sox have a good amount of lefties in the organization. That doesn't hurt at the levels, and obviously that's been an emphasis. Before we get into a lot of the breakout guys, other stuff like that, we'll start with the big two in terms of everybody's knowledge of pitching prospects. The two lefties, obviously. Starting with Noah Schultz, and then we'll get into Hagen a little because we've got to see Hagen throw a bunch more games lately, which has been really fun to see some more innings out of him. But starting with Noah Schultz, obviously, he was battling through the knee issue. It sounds like that was something that was kind of just something that was not fully stopping him from being himself, but it was definitely not useful and a little bit of an impediment here down the stretch from him. Schultz gets to AAA this season for the whole year. He definitely had more struggles than he's ever had in his career in terms of the effectiveness. He wasn't bad by any means, right? But like a guy that has dominated through the lower levels, he started to face some challenges and just have to adjust things. He's another guy who had a lot of changes to his pitch mix. We've heard a lot from the organization about just the way they're trying to maximize his arsenal. What are your thoughts on just where Schultz is at in his development and how he can continue to kind of maximize everything?
I'd call this year kind of like a good learning year for us to know Noah as a person. Like he was dealing with this knee issue and I think it bothered him more than he put on. He grew an inch and a half during not this season, but the previous season. So like getting his delivery and his body to sync up to how it used to it's a challenge when you're that young and you're actually still growing somehow at the professional level. So I think that led like the instability that he had on that leg led to like some of the command issues, some of the struggles that he had this year. It just wasn't the same finish that we saw in 24. And like from an arsenal standpoint, you know, we added the cutter last year to have as an option, similar to like Crochet had with the sinker, four seam, sweeper and cutter. And just like having an avenue to present to right-handed hitters. I think Noah's in a good spot, though. He has a good plan going to the offseason that sports science and S&C and medical got with him on to like build stability and strength around that knee so we can get him back to what he was.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Do you think there's still, I think the physical aspect of it, of course, like he's a huge dude and he's got a really unique body and the way he moves and even his delivery, right? I think that getting the mechanics in shape is going to be the biggest thing for him because we know what he can do when he's at his best in terms of what he can do on the mound. What do you see as kind of the continual breakdown and usage of his pitches, whether it is the blend of that cutter versus the slider usage? We mentioned the against right-handers. Obviously, he's going to face mostly right-handers and more right-handers than not at the level. So trying to attack the opposite side, yeah, it helps being a left-hander, but there's still, I think there's still a little bit of, you know, figuring out exactly what his usage is going to be versus each side of the plate.
Yeah, it's to be determined, I'd say. Like, you don't want to lean too much into the cutters to the righties because it could affect the whole pitch mix. Like, just looking at him this year, like, being able to get his slider back foot to righties, that will be a point of emphasis. Using his four seam and two seam up in the zone, he's got that weird approach with as big as he is, and he hides the ball pretty well to where it just plays up in the zone. Velo may add to it, and then just getting a change up bottom of the zone or below, I think is like, I don't want to pigeonhole a usage and say this is what he's going to be because, you know, if you lean too much on one thing or the other, it could affect the whole arsenal.
Yeah, 100%. I think that makes perfect sense with Noah. When you look at a guy like Hagen Smith shifting over to the big lefty arm at the top of the organization, Arizona Fall League for him, this season, you know, he is a guy who, he was effective. He didn't get hit much at all. I think at the double-A level and even now in Arizona, right, you're not seeing him get barreled up much at all right now. But you are seeing a guy who has been battling through command and is trying to find the consistency of his command. Having it been only, you know, a year and change since he's been with the organization, what are the things you've seen from Hagen in terms his growth since getting drafted?
Yeah, I've actually been like, people think it maybe he didn't dominate. You know, you see Trey Savage go up and he's pitching in the World Series. But like, I think there's been some good learning stuff for Hagen this year. And then like, there's actually been like a whole lot of positives too. He doesn't get hit even when he's in the zone, getting to two strikes and just like being on the relentless attack of a mindset for him is going to be huge moving forward because like he's facing the best hitters in the fall league. He's faced double A hitters. Like, he did even great in big league camp when he was in there. It's him versus the strike zone. And the more he attacks that, like, the more success he's going to have.
Yeah, I think that that makes perfect sense. And I think that's what you have to have some perspective on with him, is like, he isn't getting hit hard at all. So it's like, yeah, he's got to continue to throw more strikes. And like, I think everybody knows that. But at the same time, like, there's a lot to be happy about when he's not getting hit at either in Arizona, big league camp, or double A.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you see for him, you know, the velo ticked down a bit this year from where he was at. Do you think that's just more a product of him just throwing more innings, getting more comfortable at this level? Or is there kind of some adjustments being made to his, you know, his shapes or his pitches that has kind of correlated with a little bit of a drop in his velo from where he was in college?
I think it stems from the, like, college, it's once a week, right? You're starting every Friday. You have your massive, you know, you can structure your catch play, you know, and pro, you're one out of every five starts on 5 days. In the fall league, he's back to once a week. It comes down, like, with him, there's some checkpoints that he needs to hit into his delivery to where he's sitting that 95 to 98, maybe touching a nine. But like, he's very an impulse type pitcher where he relies a lot on the ground force that he creates. Where if that timing and sequencing of his delivery gets off, like, those are going to go down, and then the velo is going to go down.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. That it's a very, very timing based, and the motion is deceptive. It's a little funky, right? It's different. It's unique for sure. So I think syncing that up while also pitching for 7 months straight of a season is probably, it's only 1 year. I think it's easy to look at him and compare to that draft class, and it's a deep hole to go down. But at the same time, like, it's been a year since he was drafted, and you're still seeing a guy that's not getting hit at all through his first professional season.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely. Some other guys at the minor league level that I want to kind of pick your brain on here. There was a couple big breakout names that were on the radar, of course, to an extent for people like ourselves who watch every single minor leaguer in the system. But for the general White Sox fan, I don't think they knew some of these names even heading into 2025. I'll start with Tanner McDougal, because this is a guy who we've heard for like 3 years, like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Just wait for Tanner to like take the step. And I always thought he was a very talented guy, but last season was rough. He had a rough 2024. He ended up finishing the year in single A on a high note, but he got up to high A and really struggled coming into 25. Like, again, this spring when I was in Arizona, keep an eye on Tanner McDougal. And here we are, and Tanner McDougal was probably the best pitcher in the organization this season. So this is a guy who, you know, the fifth round pick from 3-4 years back out of high school. And now here we are, and he just dominated through the double A level this season, and is now a guy that, you know, rule five eligible, and is looking like a big league candidate here in 2026. What took Tanner from a guy with the stuff to a guy that was just utterly dominant all season?
You know, I'm going to tip my cap to Tanner right now, because like, he invested in himself in the off season. He went to Cressy, trained there, did some remote training with him. And like, it kind of like let him mature. Like, just from a whole competitive standpoint, like, he developed more of the bulldog mentality. Like, even if he fell behind hitters, he was going to come at you in the zone and like take his best crack with stuff. And it was productive all year. So super happy for him. And like, yeah, massive tip to the cap of him.
Yeah. And then obviously like the velo with him too, like he could hit those numbers before, but now he was holding 99 into the, you know, fifth, sixth inning of starts at times this season. You know, it just seemed like it really opened up everything else he does, obviously, with the big curveball, you know, and the slider got a lot better this year. He was starting to use the slider more this season, but it did seem to me at times like the velo jump and the consistency of the velo let him just really attack batters throughout the season.
Oh yeah. Nobody ever wants to face 99 to 100, no matter what role you're in. So if you're a starter rolling out at that velo for six innings, I got to like your odds for success. And again, that comes down to the work that he put in the off season and continued during the season to be able to sustain and hold those velos for all year.
definitely. The other guy who had, you know, almost as impressive a season as Tanner, but was probably even less on the radar for most people, was a 2023 fifth rounder as well in Christian Opper. Opper is a guy who was a target of the organization for a couple of years when he was coming out of high school. Then he went to JUCO and basically spent, you know, I talked to Opper a few months ago, and like he had told me, you know, I spent all of 2024 just trying to figure out my body and who I am as a pitcher and what I can be, right? And he really took, you know, that entire developmental season spent at the complex, where then coming into this season, you know, he sounded pretty confident. He sounded excited. And then he comes out of the gate and just absolutely blew through single A, finishes the year in Winston in high A, and was incredibly strong all year, 30% strikeout rate. You know, another guy with velo tick up who was sitting in the high 90s this season after being a guy that got drafted at 92, 93 for the most part. What do you think about Opper? It's just this huge breakout, even more than Tanner, I would say.
Yeah. So like you see, we saw glimpses of it and, you know, you hear the scouts talk and what they saw in college and it's like, oh, okay. Like, and then you see glimpses of it in 24 and it's that whole development side where you're the individuals trying to figure out what their body is, like how their delivery works, how their preference of how they want to move is. And like the strength and conditioning aspect, the medical aspect, and just even the diet aspect for him, like all came to fruition this year and like it had an awesome, awesome year. Like you could easily argue a case that he could have been one of the guys to go up to Birmingham to help out that club at the end of the year too with what he did.
Yeah, they still won the championship there in the Southern League, but he easily could have been pitching in that playoff run. When you look at his mix, right, you've obviously got the fastball ticked up a ton, and it's got some nice movement to it. That changeup is really, really good. He didn't use the changeup as much as he used, obviously, the fastball and the sweeper. And the sweeper, while it got good results, it definitely was less of a strike pitch. His changeup was not only effective in getting whiffs, but it was also in the zone all the time. What did you see from his changeup? And is there kind of a method behind that changeup becoming such a dominant pitch for him?
So I want to say it's like 18 or close to that off his fastball, which is like, one, you're dealing with some movement separation and then the massive velo difference coming out of the same slot. And as he did a really nice job of executing fastball both top of the zone to both sides of the plate, like it just presented a real challenge to hitters, to where like change up coming out of a similar slot and just killed the velo, produced massive amounts of whiff. Like,
yeah,
it's he knows as he keeps going higher up, like the slider sweeper, like it's a pitch for him and he will need it for left-handers. But like, if he's going to continue to start, which we all think he can, like you're going to need the changeup, especially when they stack right-handed lineups against you at higher levels.
Yeah, and it seems like a pitch he's comfortable throwing to both sides, even though as much as he will need the sweeper against lefties, obviously the changeup will be a very key part of the arsenal against right-handers, but it does seem like something that he did mix in against left-handers a good amount and felt like it was, you know, it's not too common to see a guy at that age feel very comfortable with a changeup against both sides of the plate.
No, it's actually like, I would probably say in 24, like that was his most comfortable pitch to throw. Like if he was behind an account and he'd just drop a changeup in or drop two in and then get it back to equal and then try and go and get the hitter out, whether a fastball or a slider. So.
Yeah, no, it seems like a pitch he's had comfort with, and it showed this year because the numbers against it were just phenomenal all season, and it continued to show that he can be that. Do you see him as a guy who, you know, he threw almost 100 innings this year. He was able to build up the innings into that 80-something range. Is he a guy that will, obviously, you mentioned still seeing him as a starter. Do you think this year it's just continuing to build up those innings, probably getting him to Birmingham at some point, whether it's early in the year or eventually, right? But just letting him be a starter and just grow innings more and more, because he really had never thrown even nearly this many innings before this season, right?
Right. Yeah. The target we usually like to do is like 80 to 90 and then go after that, try and get to like 115. And then once you cross that 115 threshold, you're pretty much on the radar to be like 150 plus at the major league level. So if we get you to your 115 level, like the kid gloves are off per se.
Yeah. And that seems like it'll be the setup and the opportunity that Opper will have this season for sure.
Yeah. For sure.
Last big kind of breakout name here to talk on is Shane Murphy. Is a guy who, you know, he came on the pod a few months ago, and he's the most like just completely straight up honest pitcher I think we've ever talked to on the show. Of just like, he's like, I I know I'm gonna own a base stuff. I know my stuff's not gonna overwhelm anybody, but I'm gonna attack. I'm gonna mix pitches all over the zone. I'm just gonna get guys out. And you saw him, he ended up with the best qualified ERA in double A baseball this season. So what is it about Shane that just, you know, with throwing 90 and you know, having a bunch of various off speed pitches, that he was able to just be incredible all season?
So one thing is Shane's preparation for a game, for a lineup, for whoever he faces is probably the best I've come across in years. He is just overly prepared. He knows what he wants to do. And like, since he's gotten older and gotten through the system a little bit more, like he's understood and like figured out when something's not working for him and can adjust his game plan on the fly. Like, and he learns very, very quickly. So like, yeah, sure, it's not going to overwhelm you with stuff, but when there's seven different types of pitches, you know, there's probably really four to five and he just does different stuff with them. It's not easy for a hitter.
Yeah, and no, it doesn't seem easy for a hitter. It seems like he keeps guys off balance all the time, because you see swings where you're like, that pitch, like, seems like it should be better metrically or, you know, more powerful, right? But it's not. It's just the fact that a hitter has no idea what he was throwing in that situation or where he was throwing it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that, this is getting a little tangent here, but do you think that's something, you know, we're seeing across the league, just more pitches mixed into an arsenal? Is that an effective tool even for guys with power stuff? Because I think you now more than ever, you're seeing even the guys with like elite stuff are still trying to implement 4, 5, 6 pitches.
Yeah, I think it is. Cause like, if guys are throwing, let's regard it a hand or hitterness, like righty versus righty. If you just lean on two options, a hitter can flip a coin, eliminate one, or like zone up one. But when you're featuring five and like you want to cut it down and say your usage is 20% to all those, and they're just, regardless of your velo and your stuff, and you're just going to, and call it, let's say it's your worst pitch and you throw it 15% of the time, well, that 15% of the time is going to open up avenue for your better pitches. So yeah, it's definitely trending that way.
Yeah, it seems that way every year. It feels like we've got guys going from 4 to 5 pitches and then 5 to 6 pitches. And now it's more and more the past couple of years, and we're seeing it on the brightest stage too.
Yeah.
When you look at the 2025 draft class here a little bit, we don't have to get into anybody too particularly, but you know, obviously this recent draft class, like 3 high school bats and a college bat to start the draft, that's been the emphasis, right? You've got, you know, between Billy and Jaden, right? That is a big, you know, public emphasis. The draft class on the pitching side was definitely a lot more older, experienced college guys. You know, some guys that you think have a little more experience at those ranks, but also definitely some reliever profiles, some guys that have started in high levels at college. What is your thoughts on just the pitchers throughout the 2025 class from what you've seen, at least in the first few months?
We actually didn't send them out anywhere. We didn't have them throw any innings. They got into the lab in Arizona, so they got their biomechanical assessment, and that's like the production for them in the off season. And then we kind of try and just, we identify those delivery flaws that could help them either throw strikes, throw harder, or just over quality of stuff and health throughout the season and get them into next year. Super encouraged to have all of them though. Like, I walked in during draft camp and there was probably 4 or 5 pitchers that are 6'5" plus, and it's like, man, you got some big boys here.
Yeah, these dudes are huge. Talking about the one particularly in Gabe Davis, who's listed at 6'9", 240. The dude is big and he can throw, and he's got a lot of fun stuff. What have you seen a little bit just from, you know, obviously a brief time, but what have you seen from Gabe that makes it really exciting, just his archetype as the fifth rounder this year?
Yeah, a whole arsenal, right? Big guy, throws hard, like just fine tuning his stuff and getting him to understand. Like, the biggest thing with all these college draft guys is just getting them used to, if they're going to start, be on the 4 to 5 or be on a 5-day rest period or 6-day rest period. And occasionally a rain out gets you on your normal 7-day. It's just getting them used to that. And then relievers being like, I know they go and can be available for 3 games during the course of a week. But really, like, being available, we're asking for 3 to 4 games a week out of them, or multiple innings. Like, just the whole process of it is different.
Yeah, it's different than college. I mean, again, you're playing max four games a week usually in college, and often three games for some of these guys. And some of the relievers, right, when they're playing in big conferences for these schools, right, like they know they're not even throwing on Tuesday. So it's like, we've got a weekend series, you're going to throw twice in 3 days, and then you've got 4 days of not pitching in a game, right? So it's, exactly. It's a very different dynamic. Who are some of the guys from this class that you can see, obviously early on, but who are some of the guys that are being viewed at right now as a starter, or at least the potential to be starting next season?
Obviously, Gabe, Wink, Riley.
Yeah.
There was one more. I'm drawing a blank.
Thinking.
Dang.
I'm trying to think. I think it, from what I've seen, maybe.
Two more. Max Banks and Kademan Parker. I think all can realistically be starters, and then the rest of the group's probably bullpen arms.
Makes sense. Yeah, that's what you're going to get. I think even last year in the 2024 draft, you saw a good amount of guys who you're like, oh, this guy could tick up in the bullpen, and we're going to see what happens. And then some guys that are going to get tested as a starter, we saw some various guys like Sinibaldi and some others this season get some starts. Before I let you go here, anybody else in the organization that you have either worked with or that you just see as being some of these guys that could take a really big step here in 2026?
Well, that's a beautiful
part of, I'm sure that's a lot of people.
Like, yeah. PD is, you never know, like, who's going to click and when. Had, you know, spending the last week down in the DR, I was pretty impressed with some of the arms down there and seeing what they can do and hopefully come over to States and help out. And that's like, for me and part of the organization that sits in on our pitching calls, like, that is a big area that we need to keep developing and keep getting better at as the international group. You know, drafts are great, and it's always what people talk about, but like, there are some international heroes almost everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something that every organization is trying to develop internationally even further. And, you know, we saw this season, I think in the DSL, there was some better production numbers, at least on the surface level, than we've seen in the past, you know, 5+ years. I think, honestly, I think the roster looked like it had some standouts that we haven't necessarily gotten in the past. What about a guy like Yobel Rodriguez? This is a deep cut for some people that might not know that name as well, but that's a guy who we were watching this season because the numbers in his first handful of DSL games were really, really strong.
Yeah. Very, very strong year for him. 17 year old too, I believe.
Yeah.
So just to be, he pounds the strike zone too. It's not something where, you know, it's going to overwhelm you with 17-year-old who's throwing 98, but like, he pounds the strike zone, mixes pitches real well, does a lot of nice things, and that turned out to be a very productive year for him.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Matt, we really appreciate the time. It's super cool to hear all your thoughts on the pitching within the organization. We're excited. I think this year was the first big league taste of a lot of the hitting development, and then this coming season feels like it's going to be the next wave of some really exciting pitching development.
Yeah, hopefully. Let's keep it going.
Yeah, let's keep it rolling. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate the time.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy. Just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.